Nation taught us one thing, which is, you know, employees will not stay somewhere where they don't feel supported anymore. I think there's been a huge paradox, huge shift in the way that people approach it. It used to be a very employer-driven model. I think it's much more driven by the employee now.
Hello and welcome to Walk the Talk, our version of a podcast where you walk if you want to, while we do the talking. So if you're up for it, plug in your earphones and listen while you take us on a walk. Use the time to move your body and nourish your mind. My name is Sarah Mayo, and I'm one of the trainers and co-founders of Point 3 Wellbeing, and I will be hosting this episode of our Walk the Talk. The next in our podcast series aimed at HR professionals, business leaders, and those interested in the mental health and well-being of people in the workplace. So, on to today's conversation. And I'm delighted to be joined today by Luke Tobin, Managing Director of Digital Ethos, a digital marketing agency. And that's just one of his many responsibilities. So let's get started. Luke, please can you introduce yourself in your own words? And share a little bit about your role and your experience and perspective around mental health and well-being of people in the workplace.
Fantastic. Thank you. Thanks for having me. Name's Luke Tobin. I'm the founder and CEO at a performance marketing agency called Digital Ethos. I founded the agency 6 or 7 years ago, just myself at the time with a few freelancers globally. And over the last 6 years, we've grown into a team of 60 in the UK, part of a much larger global group now, sort of nearly 800 employees, actually. And really, I think the journey that I've been on has been quite interesting. You know, you go from the first few employees where nurturing and having a relationship with them is very easy to a point now where quite a few of the employees come into the business and I might not have day-to-day contact with them. But the real foundations of the way that we've tried to build the business has been with an employee first and employee centric mindset, very much around creating an environment that's safe, that's open, that they have the support that they need. So mental health is really at the foundation of that. You know, I've personally myself struggled with various bits of anxiety and mental health stuff in the past. So it's been important to me to build a place where people can thrive in that sense.
Well, thank you for sharing and lots to unpack there. I love the use of the word nurture. I think that in itself sort of really speaks to the culture that you have created and are creating. So also I wanted to mention B Corp because it's B Corp month. We are recording this in March and you're a fellow B Corp certified organization. And in March, there is this month-long initiative aimed at raising awareness of those organizations who are going above and beyond. I believe that's the strapline when it comes to having a positive impact on society, on people, and on the planet. What does it mean to you, Luke, being a B Corp? I know it's relevant really to today's conversation in terms of how you're creating that supportive workplace culture.
It is. I think the B Corp movement, as I refer to it now, has become very fashionable. But I think what is really nice about B Corp is it creates a structure and it creates some foundational things to have within your business, regardless of size, actually, that you can do day to day to actually offer a business a purpose, not just a profit, right? I think when we all get into business, we have a goal, we have a vision, we want to grow something that we can be proud of. Quite often there's a lot of financial incentive in that. As the business developed for myself, I realized that actually, you know, we need to kind of do something from a sustainability perspective. You know, that started with simple things like the recycling bins and can we persuade our landlords on our leases to do more with you know, things around the place, down to the sort of, again, the foundational thing, what's important to employees, what's important to the world that we're contributing and living in. And I think individuals feel quite powerless when it comes to being able to do something sustainability wise, whereas businesses have the option to help lead them and actually make them feel empowered. So the B Corp movement is great. You know, it ticks the right boxes when it comes to diversity, inclusion, ESG, looking at sort of, you know, how you can better yourselves on a roadmap. And the nice thing I like about it as well is that it's not a complete one size fits all. Everyone starts at a slightly different level, but you can continually better yourself. And I think that's great. And it's, you know, wherever you start, you know, there's always improvements that you can make. So yeah, it sets a really good example to work to and towards.
Love that. And you mentioned earlier wanting to create this sort of culture where your people thrive. That's very much at the heart of what we aim to do at Point Three. And when we think of thriving, the opposite of thriving is burning out. And I shared this statistic with you before that up to 88% of employees have experienced at least some level of burnout over the last 2 years. This is quite recent research at the end of last year. And there's lots of research that supports this. Interested to hear what you make of this. Why do you think this is? And what are you doing to support your people specifically to prevent and to mitigate the risk of burnout?
Yeah, I think it's a multi-layered issue, right? So I'm not surprised at the stat, although it's quite a sad stat to see. You know, I myself have certainly overworked and reached burnout in that time frame as well. I think if we go back to COVID, especially, you know, that accelerated a lot of this because people were at home, they were isolated, they no longer could have those sort of supportive day-to-day conversations. I think that's helped to accelerate that stat. I also think by people working more remotely, it gives a lot of freedom, which I think is fantastic. I'm sure we'll talk a bit more about that as we go forward, but it also means that people are at home and sometimes feeling pressured to maybe work a bit harder to prove that they are actually working. It's interesting, the dynamic of that when we first moved to remote working was that, you know, we had to encourage people to, you know, let us know what they were doing throughout the day so that we could make sure we were, so as a consultancy, we need to clock back hours and we need to understand where time's being allocated to charge clients. And that was quite a challenge to move people to that model. But now I think people feel the pressure of kind of almost trying to prove what they're doing. And overworking, I think when you're at home and you can jump on your laptop and your laptop then and your work environment muddles with your home environment, that can create some challenges. But yeah, I think it's a concern, isn't it? You know, people are always plugged on. People are always plugged in from a digital perspective. There's no real let off. You know, people have emails on their phone. It's no surprise, but it is something that must improve. And I think it comes down to the businesses and the organizations to create, again, that environment where we understand that that's happening and that employees are going through that and create a system that allows them to be supported.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, it's a double-edged sword, isn't it? Because with COVID, you know, people did get more freedom, didn't they, to work from home, but that comes at a bit of a cost, and the lines are even more blurred than they were before between when you don't have that physical kind of the environment to separate your work and your home life. And you were talking there about that sort of pressure to appear busy or pressure to be kind of seem to be productive, and yeah, there's a name for it, productivity paranoia. Microsoft, I don't know if you've seen that study, reports on that. And you know, I think it is a reality, and it is something that, you know, everyone has a role to play in terms of managing that. I mean, coming to that, in terms of your view on sort of the responsibility for preventing burnout, does it sit with the employee? Does it sit with the manager? Does it sit with the organization? Or is it a blend of all three?
I think it's probably a blend of all three to a point, right? I think, you know, individuals need to know their limits and, you know, again, be able to have a way of stepping away from things when it does get a bit too much. But then their line managers, and they should have that support system there that allows them to elevate those concerns. if they're too busy. You know, a lot of what we see here in the agency is, if I walk around, and I often do to see how people are doing, you know, be like, oh, I'm really busy. And then it's kind of like giving them a chance to unpack that a little bit. You know, quite often people feel busy, but really when you dig into it, you know, how much of their time is being spent on things that aren't necessarily the right things or aren't smart. And I did a talk here actually quite recently. We were talking about the fact that really in a working day, people are only productive three and a half hours of that time. The rest of the time, they think that they're being productive or certainly feel busy, but actually the time actually doing the work without procrastination, everything else is less. So it's unpacking that, understanding, and really being able to nurture and support people through that. So the manager is important. And then from a business kind of ethos perspective, I think, you know, the responsibility is there to create an environment that ensures people take their lunches, has their breaks, that you do things that allows that open forum for conversation. You do regular questionnaires, ask how they're doing, see whether there's improvements you can make as a business to help, you know, again, relieve those pressure points. And yeah, I think all three people have a role in that. But I do think fundamentally, again, individuals sometimes feel powerless in that, certainly in an organization. I think it probably has to start from top down and work all the way through.
Sean here from Point Three Wellbeing. Just quickly jumping in to say a big thank you for listening to this podcast. If you want to find out a bit more about Point Three Wellbeing and how we support people in the workplace to stress less and smile more, then head to point3wellbeing.com or drop us an email to b_well@point3wellbeing.com. That's all from me. Back to the conversation.
Yeah, I mean, again, lots there. And I've seen you're very good at posting things on LinkedIn. And I've seen sort of some of the kind of the wellbeing, we would call them non-negotiables, the things that you put into place. And I think that's wonderful as a leader to be leading by example, so mm-hmm. that your people kind of have that permission to follow suit and to take personal accountability for themselves, but knowing that, you know, they have got that permission because you're doing the same. And we'll come at the end. We always ask, you know, what are some of your well-being non-negotiables? So we'll save that for the end. Mm-hmm. But that's really inspiring to see. And, you know, this work-life balance, we've sort of touched on it, and it is harder than ever, isn't it? When, you know, when the phone came out, I mean, I remember being... back in the workforce before the mobile phone, and before we were able to take email wherever we went. I also still remember saying, oh, I'm busy. So that hasn't really changed. But the lines are really blurred, and we do need to be better at kind of creating those boundaries ourselves. But we know that work-life balance is really important to people. And we did a survey at the end of last year, and 78% of those people that responded said that this was the most important area for them right mm-hmm. now. And that does sort of echo what was at the heart of, or continues to be at the heart of, the Great Resignation, which has seen swathes of sort of people moving jobs, looking for that greater flexibility and better work-life balance. How have you responded to this as a business? What does greater flexibility and work-life balance mean to you as an organization? And, you know, do you think that is that an active part of your kind of people strategy in terms of building your employer brand to attract and retain talent?
I think it's a great question. And I think the Great Resignation taught us one thing, which is, you know, employees will not stay somewhere where they don't feel supported anymore. I think there's been a huge paradox, huge shift in the way that people approach it. It used to be a very employer driven model. I think it's much more driven by the employee now in many ways. And if you don't shift to an employee centric approach, you won't survive, really. Well, you'll certainly always struggle with talent, and that means that your business is gonna suffer. So yeah, I think for us it is absolutely pivotal. I think giving people flexibility, giving them agility, giving them trust is really what it comes down to. If we think about how humans operate and how as humans we like to feel accepted and part of something, it's all about trust, right? And if you can't trust the employee to just get on with their work and deliver, then there's, you know, you shouldn't have hired them in the first place. So I think really it's about showing trust and in return, treat people as you expect to be treated. Obviously, caveats to that are, you know, if there's issues, you're going to see issues in performance anyway. So I know a lot of business leaders out there, you know, when I talk to several people that find it hard to release this and work from home mentality, and quite a few businesses out there that are quite traditionally minded are still struggling with that remote working or even having hybrid working. But what I would say is that if you don't adapt to it, you'll die in the future. And adapting to it is critical for everyone's success, joint success, right? And it all comes down to just trusting the individuals you put in to do a job. They want to do a good job, right? Every human being, again, thrives on purpose. So give them a purpose, give them an environment where they can deliver on that purpose, and give them trust, and, you know, you should succeed.
I love that. It keeps coming, you keep coming back to the fact that we are human beings ultimately. And I think it's quite easy to forget that, isn't it, when you're in the thick of something, or you know, I think there's so much, you can become a bit robotic or I think forget that ultimately those core values as human beings, we do just want to be seen and heard and understood and know that we are contributing to something bigger. So that's really speaking our language, which is lovely to hear.
Good.
And what other themes, topics, and types of support are your people kind of asking for or looking for?
Yeah, there's been several really over the last couple of years. To start with, during lockdowns, you know, a lot of people were struggling with kind of just someone to talk to. So we brought in a counselor policy where, you know, they don't need to ask, they just can expense that sort of one-to-one time that they have with a third party, just send us over an expense receipt. So we brought that in. That was good. People, as the world reopened, asked for a bit more agility to work maybe abroad. So we brought in a hybrid and remote work policy. So hybrid is effectively, you know, they're not forced in the office at all. We have hub days, as we call them, where the offices are open on a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. People come in at their leisure. And actually what I've seen over the last few months is more and more people actually have chosen to come back. It's, again, there's been quite a shift in that mentality, which is nice to see. It's great having people around, but we don't want to feel like they have to be here just for us to clock watch. The work remote policy has been really interesting from overseas. So we call it our digital nomad policy. People can work for a month from anywhere in the world as long as they're online when they need to be and doing what they need to do. So that's been great. Yeah, we've had several people that, you know, that work here, that a couple of people that work here from overseas, and they go home, spend a month with family, friends, and things that they just never get a chance to do that in another role or another environment, which again makes the role extremely attractive to them for the long term. So it builds that stability for us as well. So there's always the business side and the human side, right? You've got to look at both. But also, I like the idea of working for a month overseas every year. So why not? Why shouldn't everyone else be able to do it, you know? Outside of that, I think, you know, we do quite regular questionnaires every quarter or so where we'll ask for honest feedback. You know, we don't always get it right. You know, we're talking a lot about the things that we do well here, but we don't always do everything well. And we don't always get all of these decisions correct the first time. So we ask for honest feedback. And in that, we get, you know, things from do more joint activities, you know, can we do more ideation days, whatever it might be. And we always take that on board and start to implement it where we can. You know, the things that we can't do, we'll tell them why and, you know, explain it. But again, it's about being honest and just having that open dialogue.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I've seen your office and it was really buzzy. And I'm just wondering if there are sort of particular groups or cohorts or age demographics that, you know, prefer to be in the office or out, or who need sort of more specific support. I don't know, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've got four people in South Africa, one person in Greece. We have at one point we had someone else in Portugal. So, and now we've got the Brazilian team with the recent partnership that we've gone through with. So it's very fluid in that sense. And those people that are fully remote needs different levels of support. And we do put regular touch points in. So they've at least got, you know, a more regular one-to-one with their team leader or their manager who they don't see day to day or week to week. So that helps. I think outside of that, you know, managing people, I think, comes with complexity, right? Because every person has a slightly different way of wanting to be dealt with, wanting to be supported. So yeah, we do have, I guess, various systems for that. We have mental health first aiders within the business now that can support, and just general check-ins, I think, is kind of the way that we get around it. And if people want to go for a walk, they want to talk, it's a kind of open door policy to be able to offer that support for them. So yeah, I think there is different models for different people, but really it's all just about having the ability for them to raise concerns and for us to spot things before they become an issue.
Yeah, so it's sort of really embedded within the fabric of the organisation, within the culture of the organisation.
Exactly, yeah.
Open communication, two-way dialogue, you're listening, you're implementing where you can or explaining when you can't. By example, you're nurturing. Yeah. Well, as we come near the end, Luke, I mean, what advice do you have for any HR managers or business leaders out there who are in the midst of planning their 2023 well-being programs and strategies? Are there any sort of quick wins? What are the basics? We've covered quite a few already, but you know, where should they start?
I think one of the best things to do at the front end of this is to just go talk to the people. And I'm sure from an HR perspective, they're probably doing this, but create an anonymous questionnaire. If you go to people and ask for direct feedback, what we found is often people feel kind of pressured, or, you know, can they actually raise something about their line manager if they're not 100% happy? Are there certain things that they don't want to step on eggshells? So really create, a platform for them to be completely open. Ask for feedback. I think that will give a lot of insights at the front end. Then everything that you decide to do and implement, make sure that you always explain why. And we have what we call an impact call every Monday, where anything that's happening in the business, whether it's financial updates, whether it's incentives, whether it's issues, whether it's client concerns, we're fully transparent and we bring it to everyone's attention. And I think that open door thing, again, I know I've said it a few times, and that trust is important. Treat everyone as adults, and that as a starting point will start to give you more feedback to make the right decisions anyway. There's a lot of fear in most organizations where people aren't sure how much they can say, you know, especially if they're in junior roles. So just create a platform where they can do it, and the being able to do it discreetly or anonymously we've found is really good. So we have on our Slack, we use Slack for internal comms. We have a Slack link in there, which is like, leave your feedback. They go to a Google form, completely anonymous at any time. So even on days, what we find is some days where maybe they're not having a good day, we might get a bit more honesty in there, but that's great. Those little nuggets are superb. Just give them the space to do that. And it actually de-stresses at the time that they probably need it the most as well.
Definitely. Oh, well, that's really insightful and inspiring as well. And finally, then, we ask all of our guests on our Walk the Talks how they walk the talk. What are your three well-being non-negotiables, those things that you prioritise every day or every week to optimise your well-being?
Yeah, for me personally.
Yeah.
You know, this has changed a lot over time, and I certainly have not always got this right. I think any business owner out there will listen to this and probably think, yeah, I mean, working long hours, not getting downtime and stuff was kind of the norm for a long time. But now, really making sure that I do actually get time out in the day and actually set myself up the right way as well. So I do start every day. I try to build a routine. So I'll start the morning, map out my day, what the priorities for the day are. And I like to have that structure. I think I often get pulled in other directions otherwise. Excuse me. And if I have core things that I need to deliver, that just keep me a little bit more aligned and again helps my mental health, because I don't feel as unorganized or scatty. I always now take a break in the day, whether that's 5 minutes after a stressful call, if I'm putting out a fire, whatever it is, take 5 minutes to and, you know, and again, ask for help sometimes, have a chat to somebody, have a little vent. You know, it's so important to do that. And again, sea level at the top, it's very hard to do that unless you
lonely as well.
It's pretty lonely. Yeah, it's pretty lonely at times. So, you know, Again, trust the people around you, and you know, and you'll have a voice or somebody that can support you. And then I think switching off at the right time in the evening as well has become really important for me, because there's always more work that can be done, always. And you can always find an excuse to do more time in the evening. I have to switch off. I go to the gym. If I don't do that, I feel stressed, and that stress just builds and builds and builds. So mine's very time driven and organizationally driven, but it's been a massive change for me. And if I didn't do that and take those regular breaks, I would burn out, and I do burn out. So,
well, I love that. So it starts with a routine in the morning. You ensure that you take a break at some point during the day, and you're quite disciplined about switching off at night time.
And put your phone down, try and actually digitally detox, but don't go from the laptop screen to your mobile looking at Instagram and whatever. And it's hard, right? I know it is really hard to do this, but again, if you get into it habitually, you do start to feel your stress levels come down.
Yeah, absolutely. It does take a bit of conscious planning and thought, it definitely helps. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Luke. It's honestly been a pleasure, and there's lots in here that I feel really inspired by, and I look forward to listening to it again. And thank you to our audience for tuning in today. And whatever your business challenge is for this year, the team at Point Three are here to support you and your people to stress less and smile more. Be well, be happy, be you.